President Raisi says the smallest action against Iranian interests will definitely meet a severe, large-scale, and painful response. Israel's latest strikes on Gaza killed dozens of civilians in 24 hours, the death toll from the genocide topping 33,800. Also in Gaza, officials say that Israel tortured scores of detainees before releasing them. Hi everybody, I'm Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. The Iranian president says that the recent strikes against Israel aim to punish the regime and warned that any action against Iran's interests will meet a severe and painful response against any perpetrator. Ibrahim Raisi made the announcement in a phone conversation with the Emir of Qatar. He said that the Israeli attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus was a sign of the Israeli regime's desperation, and that's because of its failures in Gaza. He denounced the UN and the Security Council for not condemning the Israeli attack. The Iranian president underlined that a UN inaction prompted Iran to carry out retaliatory strikes. On Saturday, Iran fired hundreds of missiles and drones at Israeli targets in the occupied territories, and that more than a week after Israel targeted the Iranian embassy in violation of the UN Charter and Vienna Conventions. Now, Iran's warning against any act of aggression on its soil was the topic of our news review program. Let's take a listen to the comments of our guests on that issue.
James Thring is a peace activist who joins us from London. James Thring, welcome. You know, when you first take a look at the way that the media is covering the story, there needs to be a differentiation which is not being made, and it's in the terminology that's being used. And that is the fact that they are categorizing this as an attack from Iran. It's a retaliation. If they are using the word attack, I believe then that the rest of it is going to follow their line of how they want to portray the narrative. Why isn't that distinction being made there? Why are they using the word attack, first of all?
Well, clearly, it's Israel's attack on the consulate in Syria. That's one of the starts of this conflict. And it's in the media in the West just reports that as a simple attack and a general, brigadier general, was killed. But actually, seven people were killed altogether. And it's not just an attack, it was a complete destruction of the consulate. It's a major offence, not only on Syria's sovereign land, but Iranian sovereign territory as well. So that's a double offence in the first place, which is misreported by the media as if it was just some kind of casual attack. And that sort of differential between the way the media here in the West describes what Israel does compared with what they do as a criminal entity in attacking innocent civilians in Gaza is really open to international condemnation. We shouldn't be allowing our country and our interests to be misrepresented like this. It damages our reputation for justice and moral integrity. We are siding with a criminal entity, and we're becoming complicit in their crimes by doing so.
All right, very well. Let's bring in Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator. Welcome, Said Mohsen Abbas. So 2 days have passed, and it's really interesting how the media, in one form or another, are painting a picture of this huge defeat that Iran has suffered based on the retaliation that has happened. And nothing could be further from the truth. Now, either they're trying to mask the defeat that the Israel regime, along with the 10 countries that actually participated in it, trying to thwart the incoming missiles and drones, or they're trying to not show how weak Israel, the Israeli regime, really is in painting that narrative.
They're trying to paint it as this victory for Israel, which would mean that actually Israel doesn't need to respond because it was so brilliant at the you know, fending off this retaliatory attack. In reality, of course, they're also trying to cover up the fact that the most sophisticated radar in the world, out in the Negev desert, which is an American supplied weapon of war, essentially, has, along with all of the American defense mechanisms and the United Kingdom's defense mechanisms and the Israeli defense mechanisms, failed. They absolutely failed because Iran did exactly what? It sent a load of old model drones in to basically test this much vaunted defense mechanism of Israel, and they not only didn't knock all those very basic drones out, what they couldn't do was stop the rather more sophisticated ballistic missiles which hit the exact targets that Iran had wanted to. And those ballistic missiles aren't even the latest hypersonic one that Iran has in its possession. So let's be clear, Iran has, with probably some of the most basic military hardware that it has at its disposal, completely wrecked and destroyed the most sophisticated Israeli defense systems, along with the American and the imperialist support that they had. So this is a huge defeat for Israel. It's a huge message to the whole world that Iran now has changed the equation, that you cannot hit Iran directly, expect to hit its soil, and not get a retaliation, and a retaliation which will be hugely effective.
Yeah, we're fresh out of time. Thank you very much. That's James Thring, peace activist. Don't forget to send that letter, by the way. You could email it, too, if you'd like. And also, say Mohsen Abbas, we journalist and political commentator, both from London. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this news review.
Iran's Operation True Promise was a retaliation for the Israeli regime's terrorist attack against the Iranian embassy in Syria. That was the first time Iran used a variety of military assets, including drones and missiles, in conjunction with radar hacking technology to hit its intended targets with pinpoint accuracy. Here's a look at Iran's military prowess and why the operation was successful.
Iran's Operation True Promise was a significant counterattack that proved successful in a host of arenas, especially the military one. Now, this is while Israel is not only downplaying the efficiency of this operation, but it is falsely reporting that most of the incoming missiles and drones were intercepted. But that is not exactly the case. The multiple drone and missile attacks were preceded by a series of cyber attacks on the Zionist regime's power grid and radar systems. Now, the Zionist regime's radars were under a hack attack, which forced the closure of the airspace over occupied territories. Now, the hack also interrupted the coalition between the Israeli air defense systems and their American counterparts. Well, four rounds of drone and missile attacks were executed at 11 p.m. local time by the IRGC. Now, the first wave included dozens of Shahed 136 kamikaze drones, about 100 units of Delta wing-shaped, low-observable and low-signature loitering munitions with a range of 2,000 kilometers and a speed of about 200 kilometers per hour. Now, that carried a warhead of 50 kilograms. Well, after the first wave, three more wave attacks that followed at intervals of about half an hour, and it is estimated that a total of 318 drones and missiles were launched. Keep in mind that this operation is the largest drone attack in Iran's history. Well, the numbers certainly prove that. Now, next came the launch of a series of cruise and ballistic missiles, accompanied by simultaneous drone and missile strikes by the Axis of Resistance groups from Iraq, Yemen, and Lebanon. Well, the types of missiles are speculated to be Kheba Shikan ballistic missile with a range of over 1,400 kilometers and a half a ton warhead. And the unthinkable became a reality when Iran unveiled the production of hypersonic missiles at the end of 2023, a more advanced version of the Fatah hypersonic missile. No one, well, would have guessed that they would be using it in a counterattack operation just 5 months later. And all hypersonic missiles did hit their designated targets, marking the first time Iran employed such weapons against real targets. It was reported that at least seven were used in this operation, which hit the Nevatim Air Base located in the Negev Desert. It hosts the F-35 planes used in the terrorist attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus. Well, another base in the Negev Desert was also hit. The Ramon Air Base was target of multiple missiles, leaving a trail of destruction. Well, this post speaks volumes. It said that 12 countries participated in the operation to protect Israel. There were 10 actually, including more than 170 fighter jets. Just 250 defense missiles were launched from our ships, but more than 60% of the missiles hit the targets. Who are the Iranian engineers? Again, pointing to Iran's military might. Well, Iran's military posture has now changed when it comes to the Israeli regime. Major General Hossein Salami, the commander of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, IRGC, has said, from now on, if the Zionist regime targets any of our personnel, properties, and civilians, we will not hesitate to retaliate from our own lands.
All hypersonic missiles fired by Iran's IRGC have hit their designated targets in Israel, marking the first time that Iran employed such weapons against real targets. The Israeli regime and its supporters failed to intercept any of the hypersonic missiles fired by Iran. They were fired alongside drones that are ballistic and cruise missiles during the retaliatory operation. Iran is one of the few countries that possesses the technology to produce hypersonic missiles. They can travel at stunning speeds and hit their targets with great precision. Iran's hypersonic missiles are highly maneuverable. They have an unpredictable flight path to confuse the enemy's missile shields. The IRGC says that tracking Iran's hypersonic missiles is impossible. Pakistan has openly supported Tehran's retaliatory attack on Israeli-occupied territories. It says that it was Iran's legitimate right to respond to the Israeli assault on its embassy in Damascus. Our correspondent Nasser Kazmi has more.
Pakistan backed and acknowledged Iran's retaliation against Israeli aggression. Pakistan's Defense Minister Khwaja Asif asserted that Israel had perpetrated an assault on the embassy of an independent nation, Iran, resulting in the tragic loss of its senior military officers in Damascus. Talking to a local TV station, Asif noted that Iran's retaliatory strike against Israel was both symbolic and meticulously planned and calculated.
Iran has the right to retaliate as Israel attacked the Iranian consulate in open violation of international laws. Pakistan was also expecting retaliation from Iran after the Israeli attack. The attack on the Iranian consulate was a result of supporting Palestinians.
Islamabad also warned that ramifications of this conflict will resonate globally, implicating nations that align themselves with Israel.
The rising tensions in West Asia might affect other countries, including Pakistan. The flames of war would also engulf those countries that are backing Israel. We do not want tensions to increase. However, the genocide of Palestinians must stop.
Experts believe that Iran's befitting response to Israel was imminent and shows Tehran's capability to respond to any military aggression.
Iran's assault on Israeli-occupied territories delivers a resounding message to the 56 Islamic nations, asserting its stance of standing alone against oppressors. Tehran's precision strikes against Israel showcase its sovereignty and competence in defending its territorial integrity. The absence of support from the 56 Muslim nations, self-proclaimed champions of justice and deterrence, begs the question.
The Pakistani nation has widely acknowledged Tehran's retaliatory response to Israel, calling it a victory against the Zionist regime.
Pakistan's recognition of Iran's deterrence against Israel signifies solidarity between the governments and the people of both nations. This acknowledgement reflects a united front from Pakistan in support of Iran within the region. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Now moving to the Gaza Strip, where more death and destruction has been reported on day 193 of the genocidal war on the besieged territory. At least 13 people, including the five in Rafah, were killed in the latest attacks. That pushes the death toll since October 7th to more than 33,800, mainly women and children. The number of the wounded has also moved up to 76,500. Hospitals in Gaza are lacking enough medicine equipment to treat the wounded. The health system has almost collapsed as hospitals and clinics were not even spared from attacks. The Israeli regime has also used famine as a weapon of war. Some 2 million people are struggling to get access to food amid Israeli restrictions on humanitarian aid into the besieged territory. A Palestinian official in Gaza says that the Israeli regime tortured dozens of detainees before releasing them on Monday. According to the spokesman for Gaza's Crossings Authority, occupation forces released 150 Palestinians abducted during their invasion of Gaza. Kerem Shalom said detainees went through painful ordeals, with some of them being stripped during detention. A number of them are said to have been sent to the hospital for treatment. Now, one of the freed Palestinians revealed that he and his friend were beaten, blindfolded, and with their hands tied up. He said that Israeli forces also unleashed dogs on them. This is not the first time that a regime has employed inhumane tactics against detainees. UN appointed rapporteurs have also documented Israeli abuse of Palestinian detainees on numerous occasions. And that's all for this newscast from Tehran. Thank you for being with us.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. In the United States, the Border Patrol chief has warned the migrant crisis is a national security threat and says his biggest fear is not the 1 million people apprehended so far this year, but the 140,000 known gotaways. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. U.S. Border Patrol Chief Jason Owens has called the situation at the southern border with Mexico a national security threat, expressing concern about tens of thousands of migrants who have evaded apprehension and entered the United States surreptitiously over the past 5 months. Jason Owens said Border Patrol is closing in on recording 1 million apprehensions of migrants in between ports of entry along the U.S.-Mexico border in the 2024 fiscal year, which started last October. For the third consecutive year, his agency is on track to record 2 million apprehensions by the time the fiscal year ends at the end of September, Owens said. That number is a large number, but what's keeping me up at night is the 140,000 known gotaways. But Owens asked, why are they risking their lives and crossing in areas where we can't get to? Why are they hiding? What do they have to hide? And what are they bringing in? What is their intent? Where are they coming from? We simply don't know the answers to those questions. Those things, for us, are what represent the threat to our communities. The situation, Owens added, amounts to a national security threat. Border security is a big piece of national security, added, and if we don't know who is coming into our country and we don't know what their intent is, that is a threat, and they're exploiting a vulnerability that's on our border right now. However, Owens agreed that the vast majority of migrants coming into the United States border are good people. I think the migrants that we encounter that are turning themselves in, yes, I think they absolutely are, by and large, good people. I wish they would choose the right way to come into our country and not start off on the wrong foot by breaking our laws. While a very small amount of these apprehended at the southern border are serious criminals, such as those convicted of murder or other serious crimes, Owen said most migrants are surrendering themselves to border patrol agents to escape poverty or violence in their home countries. They're coming across because they're either fleeing terrible conditions or they're economic migrants looking for a better way of life, he said. Customs and Border Protection, the CBP statistics show a tiny fraction of migrants processed by Border Patrol have criminal records in the United States or other countries that share information with American officials. And an even smaller percentage have been convicted of serious crimes. Available data and studies also suggest that migrants in the United States illegally do not commit crimes at a higher rate than native-born Americans. Still, top law enforcement officials, including FBI Director Christopher Wray, have voiced concerns about criminal actors, including potential terrorists, exploiting the unprecedented levels of migration along the U.S. southern border with Mexico over the past 3 years. In both fiscal years, 2022 and 2023, Border Patrol reported over 2 million apprehensions of migrants who crossed the southern border illegally, both all-time highs. Jason Owen said the extraordinary flow of people into the United States is mainly driven by cartels. Asked if cartels were setting the rules of engagement at the southern border, Owen said, yes, they absolutely are. The New York Post has also covered this same story and tells us more. U.S. Border Patrol Chief Jason Owen said the migrant crisis has become a serious national security threat, as terrorists may be slipping across the border with Mexico and smugglers dictate the flow into the United States. They dictate what the flow is going to look like, and we respond to it, Owen said in an interview on CBS's Face the Nation. He said, we try and get out in front of it and deny them the ability to use these areas. But at the end of the day, there's over 1,900 miles of border with Mexico. Under the Biden administration, the United States has endured record levels of migrants pouring across the southern border with Mexico, including thousands who claim asylum and are then released into the country. Border Patrol has reported 1,151,000 encounters at the southern border, according to the most recent tally of numbers through the 2024 fiscal year. The prior year saw 2,475,000 cases, according to the agency. Owens fretted that there could be terrorists and other dangerous people slipping through the system. That number is a large number, but what's keeping me up at night is the 140,000 known gotaways. It's not part of that, he said, referring to the official count, and that's just what we know. That is a national security threat. Border security is a big piece of national security, and if we don't know who is coming into our country, and we don't know what their intent is, that is a threat. They're exploiting a vulnerability that's on our border right now. The border chief noted that most of the encounters are with individuals who are turning themselves in and are fleeing dire economic conditions at home. That doesn't make them bad people, it's just that they're not being respectful of the laws that we've established as a country, he said. Jason Owen stressed that there are dangerous people buried in that population that do pose a risk to the United States. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story. The U.S. Border Patrol Chief Jason Owens has said the crisis at the southern border with Mexico is a national security threat that keeps him awake at night, in a new interview during which he spelled out the danger posed by millions of illegal migrants who've entered the country in recent years. The U.S. Border Patrol is mere days away from hitting 1 million apprehensions of migrants in fiscal year 2024, which began for the U.S. government last October. What's keeping me at night awake is the 140,000 gotaways, Owens said. The number of migrants who have sneaked into the country undetected since last October. But he asked, what are they hiding? What do they have to hide? What are they bringing in? What is their intent? Where are they coming from? Owens explained are the primary concerns of the U.S. Border Patrol about the gotaways, whose backgrounds and locations are virtually unknown to the U.S. government. We simply don't know the answers to those questions. Those things for us are what represent a threat to our communities, he said. Jason Owens said his department is on track to record some 2 million apprehensions by the time the fiscal year ends in September. The U.S. Border Patrol chief said border security is a big piece of national security, and the illegal migrants being smuggled into the country are exploiting a vulnerability facing the nation at present time. He said migrants who've made their way into the United States this year have come from at least 160 different countries, some of which are many continents away. Routes from Europe and Asia lead to the Darien Gap in Panama, a popular starting point for smugglers leading large groups of migrants north through Central America and eventually into the United States.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge with Sheikh Mukhtar on IRIB English Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of a guide for managers based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently focusing on one of the phrases in the 185th sermon of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. And in that phrase, Imam Ali alayhi salam warns us of an important issue, and that is that if a society gets too much engrossed in blessings, that can lead to a certain form of drunkenness, a spiritual drunkenness. If a person would achieve that or you can say that type of difficulty faces the community, whereby they become drunk because of these blessings, then know that the community will not be able to achieve its goals, its aims and objectives. Rather, things will be going in the opposite direction. Inshallah, we shall see and discuss in this session what are those problems that a person can face, what are those difficulties that can overcome the society and make it not achieve its goals and aims because of these blessings.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created the heavens and the earth and all of that is within there as a test for mankind. One of the most important things that a person needs to realize in his life is that everything in a certain form or way can be counted as a test. That includes blessings. You know, sometimes we feel tests are just difficulties that we face in life. But rather, sometimes blessings become even a bigger test for a community. One of the problems that happens when a person has a lot of physical blessings, and if a community gets a lot of physical blessings, and these physical material blessings are not channeled, are not, are not organized in a way that can lead to the development of the community, normally these blessings end up causing class differences in the society. So even if you look into history, and even today, if you want to look at the wealthy communities, the wealthy countries, let's say, which have a lot of wealth, many times when this wealth comes and if it is not planned and organized well, it normally leads to an increased, difference in the classes of the society. So the poor class and the distance between the poor class and the rich class increases. And this is basically because of not planning these things well. But as I said, this is one of those harms that can befall a community. And therefore, a community needs to be very careful to be able to plan for these problems. And that would be to promote systems, to promote ways and methods in which this wealth that is there can be divided in an accurate way. But sometimes even the community and the society and the leadership might place these laws, these rules and regulations, but because the person involved himself is not ready and prepared to receive all of these physical blessings spiritually, that person may not abide by those systems, may fool, may trick, may, you know, do all of these different corrupt methods to become richer and richer. This is a possibility, and it's something that we've seen that happens in the society.
Nahjul Balagha, translated as the Peak of Eloquence, is a compilation of sermons, letters, and sayings that reflected Imam Ali's profound insights on governance, ethics, spirituality, and social justice. Sayyid Razi's meticulous work in preserving and presenting Imam Ali's words has made Nahjul Balagha a timeless source of inspiration for scholars, theologians, and seekers of wisdom.
على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه.
Now, we say that these blessings, that when they come into a society, a person should quickly gather himself, right? A person should not be just happy that, oh, now we struggled all these years, now we have to achieve the results of our struggles, now let us have a lot of blessings and let us be happy with these blessings. You know, sometimes this kind of attitude overwhelms people. And that includes the Islamic society at that time. So when these blessings came, one of the effects was there was a division in terms of class. Some people became very rich, while others remained to be poor. The government, of course, could have created systems, but then the people have to abide by those systems. So it now comes down to the point that some people are not prepared for these blessings. And we have got examples in history. So what is that preparation that a person needs to have for these blessings to come, and so that he can use them in the right way? That preparation is simply to understand and to inculcate inside one's heart the obedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, number one. Number two, the piety that a person needs to have with regards to the duties that Allah has prescribed. And number three, the moral fabric of a person should be coordinative, or you can say it should be compatible to what we call zuhd and asceticism. Not that asceticism in terms of leaving all the physical pleasures and blessings, no. But rather to be able to not be attached to these things. So a person needs to inculcate, and that needs planning. That means that needs training. So when a person is working hard to earn a lot of money, at the same time praying to Allah to earn and to get a lot of physical blessings and material blessings, at the same time he should pray to Allah that he gives him the ability and the courage and the strength to be able to earn the necessary traits to protect himself and his iman, and to be able to use the wealth for the progress of the society. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar in the program Gate of Knowledge on RIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Iranian Foreign Ministry has emphasized that any military action against the Islamic Republic will prompt further defensive measures. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. Iran's foreign ministry reaffirmed its commitment to international laws, but says the country will take further defensive measures in case of any military aggression against it. The Islamic Republic of Iran would not hesitate to take further necessary defensive measures to protect its legitimate interests against any act of military aggression or unlawful use of force, the foreign ministry said in a statement on Sunday, 14th of April. The statement added, Iran carried out a series of military strikes on Israeli military bases in exercise of the Islamic Republic's inherent right of self-defense, as recognized under Article 51 of the United Nations Charter. The statement added, the attacks were also a response to Israel's recurring military aggression, resulting in the killing of the Iranian military advisers in Syria upon a request from its government, in particular the regime's recent armed attack against Iran's diplomatic premises in the Syrian capital, Damascus. The statement reiterated Iran's adherence to the purposes and principles of the United Nations Charter and to international laws. Tehran, however, is resolute on forcefully defending its sovereignty, territorial integrity, and national interests against any unlawful use of force and aggression, the foreign ministry emphasized. The statement added, the Islamic Republic of Iran's resort to defensive measures in exercise of its right of self-defense demonstrates Iran's responsible approach towards regional and international peace and security. The foreign ministry emphasized that Iran feels responsible towards regional and global peace and security at a time when the occupying Israeli regime has engaged in genocidal campaign against the Palestinians of the Gaza Strip, with repeated military aggression against neighboring countries and fanning the flames of war across the region. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, launched extensive missile and drone strikes against the occupied Palestinian territories late on Saturday, 13th of April, in response to Israel's missile attack on a consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus, Syria, on 1st of April. Iran hit a large intelligence base in the occupied Palestinian lands and Israel's Nevatim airbase, from where an F-35 jet took off to target Iran's consulate building in Damascus. A senior commander of the IRGC Quds Force, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, and his deputy general, Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi, were among the seven Iranian martyrs of the deadly Israeli attack on the consulate building in Damascus. Meanwhile, Iran's United Nations ambassador, Amin Saeed Iravani, has warned the United States against initiating military action against the country in the aftermath of the Islamic Republic's recent legitimate retaliatory operation against the Israeli regime, Washington's most trusted ally. Iran has no intention of engaging in conflict with the United States in the region, Iran's permanent ambassador to the United Nations, Amir Saeed Iravani, told a UN Security Council meeting on Sunday, 14th of April. Iravani added, however, if the U.S. initiates military operations against Iran, Iranian citizens, or Iran's security and interests, Iran will certainly use its inherent right to respond proportionately. On 1st of April, the Israeli regime committed a terrorist attack against Iran's diplomatic premises in the Syrian capital Damascus. The Israeli attack resulted in the martyrdom of Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, a commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, IRGC, as well as his deputy, General Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi, and five other accompanying IRGC officers. Retaliating against the attack, the IRGC targeted the occupied territories late on Saturday, 13th of April, with a barrage of drones and missiles. The retaliatory attack, codenamed Operation True Promise, has inflicted damage on Israeli military bases across the occupied Palestinian territories. Also, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi has hailed the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps IRGC's retaliatory attack on the Israeli occupied territories, saying the hybrid operation taught the Israeli regime an unforgettable lesson. In a statement on Sunday, 14th of April, President Ebrahim Raisi said, the drone and missile strikes turned a new chapter in the history of Iran's authority and materialize the sincere promise of the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, to punish the aggressor. President Raisi said, "Last night, our zealous and courageous children in the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, with the cooperation and coordination of all the defense and political sectors of the country, turned a new page in the history of Iran's authority and taught an unforgettable lesson to the Zionist regime." President Raisi highlighted the powerful impact of the mission, conveying a resolute message of authority and deterrence to the Islamic community, while instilling fear and humiliation among the adversaries of humanity and of the Islamic Republic. He further noted that during the last 6 months, and especially in the last 10 days, Iran has emphasized the dangers of the United Nations Security Council's inaction regarding violations by the Zionist regime, particularly in the Gaza Strip. But despite efforts, the Security Council's response has been impeded by the influence of the United States and other backers of the Zionist regime. Turkey's TRT World has also covered this story and tells us more. Iran initiated retaliatory strikes against Israel late on Saturday, 13th of April, deploying over 200 drones and missiles in the attack. The Iranian retaliation was triggered by an Israeli airstrike in Syria, which claimed the lives of prominent Iranian generals. The barrage of drones and missiles marks the first instance of Iran launching an attack directly from its own territory against the Israeli regime. The attack has sparked concerns among those who fear that Israel's potential response against Iran could trigger yet another escalation in an already volatile region. Iran's top military general says a message has been sent to the United States through Switzerland, warning against colluding with Israel in its possible offensive against Iran. Top Iranian General Mohammad Bagheri, the chief of the general staff of Iran's armed forces, told reporters in Tehran that Washington has been informed if it gets together with Israel in its possible further military action against Iran, then the American bases in the region will not be safe. US President Joe Biden has reportedly told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu during a telephone call that the United States will not support any Israeli counterattack against Iran, according to senior White House officials. According to a CNN report, a senior Biden administration official disclosed on Sunday, 14th of April, that Joe Biden conveyed to Benjamin Netanyahu during a phone call on Saturday that the US will not engage in offensive operations against Iran. The Iranian president, Sayyid Ebrahim Raisi, warned Israel and its allies against any reckless action after Tehran's drone and missile attack in retaliation for a deadly strike on its consulate building in Damascus. President Raisi said, "If the Zionist regime or its supporters demonstrate reckless behavior, they will receive a decisive and much stronger response." Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also reported on the same story. Iran said on Sunday, 14th of April, that it won't hesitate in taking further defensive measures to protect its legitimate interests against any aggressive military actions. The Iranian Foreign Ministry reaffirmed its adherence to the principles and objectives of the United Nations Charter and to international laws, according to a report by the Mehr news agency. The Foreign Ministry reiterated Iran's determination to decisively defend its sovereignty, its territorial integrity and national interests against any illegal order of use of force and aggression. It also stressed that Tehran's resort to defensive measures in exercising its right to self-defense shows the responsible approach taken by Iran towards regional and international peace and security. The statement added, If necessary, we will not hesitate to take further defensive measures to protect Iranian legitimate interests against any aggressive military actions and illegal use of force. Iran began an airborne attack on Saturday, 13th of April, against Israel in retaliation for a 1st of April airstrike on its diplomatic facility in the Syrian capital, Damascus. The airstrike killed at least 7 members of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, IRGC, including 2 top Iranian generals. Tehran has accused the Israeli regime of carrying out the airstrike on its consulate building in Damascus and has vowed to respond. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM, 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say La ilaha illallah. Never forget to say La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Ammar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. A very beautiful hadith from Imam Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam on this topic says, as a Shia, we have to have ma'rifat of our Imam. Ma'rifat is the base of everything. If we have ma'rifat of Imam, then we know their likes and dislikes. We know what they want from us, how we can relate ourselves to them, to the A'imma Tahireen, to Imam Amir al-Mumineen, to Imam Jafar Sadiq, to Imam Raza, to other A'imma. otherwise we are in trouble. There's a beautiful hadith from narrated from Janabi Kulaini from Usul al-Kafi, and the hadith goes like this. An Sudair قال قلت لأبي جعفر إني تركت مواليك مختلفين يتبرأ بعضهم من بعض. Once Sudair left his town, his city, for meeting Imam. When he reached to Imam, he said to Imam, إني تركت مواليك مختلفين. O Imam, O son of Rasulullah, when I left my city, when I was leaving your followers, your Shia in that city, they were in dispute. They were in dispute with each other. وَيَتَبَرَّأُ بَعْضُهُمْ مِنْ بَعْضٍ. And they were cursing each other. A group of them cursing another group. So they called themselves Yoshia, but they were there among them. There was a lot of disputes, اختلافات, and they were cursing each other. يَتَبَرَّأُ بَعْضُهُمْ مِنْ بَعْضٍ. And definitely, Shia, as a true Muslim, true mu'min, shouldn't do these things. But they were doing this. And Sudair brought this news to Imam. When Imam heard this, قال فقال وما أنت وذاك. Beautiful sentence. Imam said, what is your relationship with that type of problems? It is their problem. Let them call themselves Shia. If they have disputes, if they have problems among each other, if they create trouble for each other, and they curse each other, they say bad words to each other. Imam said, what is your relationship with them? Imam just right there separated him from others. He said, no, you are something else and they are something else. What is your relationship with them? Ma ant wadak. And then Imam said, innama kulla fannas salasa. People have three types of duties among us, Ahlul Bayt. From Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to us in our three phases. Number one, ma'rifatul a'immah. People have to have a ma'rifat of our Imam, their Imam, like us. They should know us, what we want from them, who are us, what is our relationship with them, what is their relationship to us, Ahlul Bayt. So this is number one. People have to have our ma'rifah. Then, وَالتَّسْلِيمُ لَهُمْ فِيمَا وَرَدَ عَلَيْهِمْ. They have to be surrendered to our guidance. When we guide them, they shouldn't say, oh, this is the old time, this is the old word, this hadith belongs to thousand years ago. No. Our teachings, our guidance is for all the time. So when we say something, they have to be surrendered to our teachings and guidance. And then Imam made the last point. He said, وَالرَّدُّ إِلَيْهِمْ فِي مَخْتَلَفُوا فِيهِ. If they have dispute, if they have issues, if they have problems, they shouldn't go this and that to ask their rights. No, they should come to us. If we are not among us, there are fuqaha, there are mujtahideen, there are scholars. Go and ask and find the solutions of your problems through Ahlul Bayt and through guidance of Ahlul Bayt and through teachings of Ahlul Bayt. Imam said to Sudair, what is your relationship with those people, those who are fighting to each other, those who have disputes among themselves, and they are cursing each other, they are blaming each other. There's no relationship between you and them. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Ammar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Iran, in an impressive display of strength,